We're sitting at Interop, and with me are Craig Mills and Chris Young from HP. Now we'll talk about an interesting topic. Well, Craig will tell us what the topic is. I won't spill the beans. And just to make an intro, I was running an SDN workshop 2 days ago, telling people what all the things that are wrong with OpenFlow. And the conclusion was, as one of the participants said afterwards, well, after this, I will not even consider OpenFlow. Which is like, okay, he got vaccinated, that's good. However, there are certain narrow use cases. It might be a huge niche, but it's still a niche where OpenFlow does make sense. And Craig claims that campus is one of those niches. So we'll do a deep dive on what HP is doing with SDN and OpenFlow in campus. Before going there, Craig, you haven't been on my podcast before, so people might not know who you are.
Okay. My name is Craig Mills. I'm with HP. I'm a global product line manager, so I manage the SDN products and also the ProVision ASICs.
And Chris?
So I'm Chris Young. I am a consulting systems engineer, at NetmanChris on Twitter, personal blog on controlissueswithak.net, and yeah, I get around.
And you'll like be the mediator if we get fighting here.
I don't know. I think it might be fun to watch, so.
Come on.
I'll be good. I'll keep you guys in line.
Yeah. Okay.
They have gloves. Don't worry, everybody.
So, Chris. HP is doing SDN in campus. What are you guys doing?
So we've got a bunch of switches, all implemented OpenFlow 1.0 years ago. Started with Ethane and Stanford in 2007. I think our first release in the standard switch software line, I think was in 2011, maybe 2012. And since then, every software image you get for a majority of the switches has OpenFlow enabled, 1.3. We've got a SDN controller, which has been out for about a year and a half. We've got, now we have three SDN applications that HP's written. There's a Protector, which is a security app, a Optimizer, which right now is a little focused on Microsoft Link calls, and then the new one that we're launching at Interop is Visualizer. And those are the three SDN apps, mainly focused in campus. You could probably squeeze them in a data center. I mean, get some value out of them, but
and the thing I would add to that, because it always gets forgotten, is management. We actually have
that.
Yeah, I know. It's that stuff that happens after you sell it. So what we've also done is look from an SDN overall architecture standpoint, and kind of realize that you kind of have to manage this stuff. If your controller has problems, you probably kind of want to know it. So what we did is we looked and broke down SDN into the infrastructure, controller, applications, and then a management layer on top of that. So when we start looking at, you know, the myth of the monolithic controller that's going to do everything, past that, right?
So we have to hear that.
If you want to look at multiple controllers, you need to do operations things like control revisioning, make sure that your apps are actually running the same version of code so you have the same bugs, which is still hard for people to understand why that's a good thing, right? Predicted behavior. So that's the other layer that we have on top of this as well.
Yeah, well, that's called DevOps. You fail consistently.
Yep. Yeah. Fail fast.
I know how I failed. That's important.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you have OpenFlow on the whole line of switches. Those are the ProCurve switches, right?
Yes.
And you also have OpenFlow on the 5900 data center switch, right?
Yeah, and also on some of the campus switches on that side as well, the 55 and the 5130.
58 got two, right? I think 5500 EI, HI, 5800,
5130.
Yeah, 5130. Yeah.
And they all support OpenFlow 1.3, yes.
Those are only 1.3, yeah.
Now you were mentioning three applications. What are they doing?
So it's a little difficult to talk about what they do because OpenFlow has, as we talked about, growing pains, maybe, is a good way to put it. Its origin is from Stanford. It's very academic, and it's hard to deploy in its pure form. I wouldn't use it in its pure form.
Thank you.
So what we've done that's different from that is it's really simple, but has a, it's really turns the whole implementation on its head is we, I'm gonna dive into OpenFlow.
Sure.
Hang on. So the last rule hit, we put down a match all forward normal. Mm-hmm. And what that does is all packets that hit that, if it doesn't pick up any other rules in the OpenFlow tables, it goes back to the normal forwarding plane. Whether it's OSPF, spanning tree, L2 learning, ACLs, all those hit the packet and it just flies.
Which okay. means the network does what it's always done.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to simplify this. I mean, yeah. I totally know what you're talking about, yeah. but listeners may not. You're running regular layer 2, layer 3 forwarding on the switch.
Yes.
And you're running the spanning tree, the routing protocols, everything that the switch has already been doing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you have a running network.
Exactly.
Using traditional distributed control planes so that it scales.
Yes.
And then on top of that, you're adding OpenFlow rules from the OpenFlow controller, and OpenFlow rules take precedence over normal forwarding.
In 90% of the cases, yes. There's things like LACP that we really don't want.
Yeah, you don't want to interact with the control plane.
Yeah, yeah.
So from the hardware perspective, whatever the switch has programmed to be punted to the control plane, you don't interact with that. You leave that alone.
Yeah, well, it's mainly the L2 stuff, so the BDPUs and LACP, and there might be one or two others, but everything else you can intercept. So if you want to intercept OSPF,
interesting.
That.
So you actually said, well, there are these things that are critical for
time sensitive and
operation, which is like you said, LACP or probably also BFD if you have it.
Yep.
And there are other things that are not so time critical. So I could do it them in the controller if I wish.
Yeah.
Hopefully not, but well, you know, people like reinventing the wheels.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. So you can do that because it's not time critical.
Right. Exactly.
And then, so you have this first priority are time critical thingies. Then you have the OpenFlow rules, and the last OpenFlow rule could be fall to normal processing, which is like, I don't care what you do with this packet, dear switch, just do it.
Yeah, do what you were going to do with it if OpenFlow wasn't enabled.
And there's always new technologies, especially when we're looking at something that, according to the marketing, is such a huge paradigm shift. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should see the look on his face. So we don't want to have to recreate the wheel on everything, like networking. As much as people can criticize us as an industry for being slow and everything else, considering how complicated distributed systems problems are, we've actually done a really good job at it and built on 20, 30, 40 years of content, and that's not going to get rebuilt in OpenFlow overnight.
Right? Yeah,
and maybe it never should.
That was the point I was making in the SDM workshop, I guess. I said, well, you know, we've been working on this thing for 40 years. Either we are idiots or we explored most of the good solutions.
Yeah.
So I don't expect to see something revolutionary because, you know, maybe it's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of people working, at least not so much nowadays, but in the early days of OpenFlow, everyone wanted to build an L2 learning switch. And I said, why? It works. It already does L2 learning. You're wasting time.
You don't
spanning
get it.
Tree, I might take an argument of replacing spanning tree or doing something better there, but...
No, you don't get it. You know how you start learning a new programming language? You write a Hello World application. So you have to reinvent the learning bridge. Come on.
No.
Give us some credit for Hello World.
Okay, but you don't... Yeah. Okay. You can do it, but you don't do it in assembly.
Of course you do if you want to learn assembly.
It's painful, man. Why torture ourselves? Anyway, so...
Some people are masochists.
Yeah. So there's some good and bad things about what we do. And so the good thing is we've removed the north-south communication from the switch to the controller is no longer really a bottleneck because we're not sending everything to the controller. Mm-hmm. The bad thing is we're not sending anything to the controller because all packets are hitting that normal rule and being sent traditional. So your controller is doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really that helpful. So we've added
a few
things.
But that's the initial state, right?
Yeah, that's the initial state. And then actually our controller, not our apps, but our controller has what we call hybrid mode.
Mm-hmm.
And this is hybrid mode, that forward normal rule. But then we also put in a node discovery and a topology discovery algorithm. And so basically that's just we send copies of DHCP and ARPS to the controller. So we let the original packet fly and we send copies up to the controller. So that means the controller knows where all the hosts are. And then we also do BDDP, which it's like LLDP, but I'm running a network and I'm using LLDP, and so I don't want OpenFlow owning it. So there's another protocol. I think it uses the same ether type as BDDP, but it's broadcast domain, so it's not just link. Mm-hmm. So it can fly through switches that aren't OpenFlow enabled. And then we match it on the other side and pull it up. And that's how we discover the topology.
So you discover the topology from the controller?
Yeah, so the controller does the packet out of BDDP, and then there's the...
Sure. Packet in on the other end to see...
To see which
what came through, yeah.
Exactly.
And you're doing the DHCP snooping,
essentially,
and ARP snooping and things like that by having two output actions, sent to controller and sent to normal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so that way our controller still isn't doing anything on the network, but now it knows what's happening, it knows the topology, and it knows the host locations.
It's actively scanning the topology, and it's passively listening to the endpoint discovery.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And then with that...
So far, so cool.
So now we have a view of what's out there.
Yeah.
So we go from blind to knowledge.
Yeah, but still not really redirecting traffic or anything
like that.
No, but
just this gives you endpoint visibility across the whole campus, which is not a bad idea.
Yes.
You don't have to log into switches and explore where a certain MAC address is.
Yeah.
You can say, well, where is this MAC? Speaking about this, do you have any mapping to something like Windows AD or something along those lines?
I did not pay him money. Yes.
No, this was the question I got on the SDN workshop, by the way.
Yeah, so we've got the three applications. I think each one of them, just in the last release, we started to add Active Directory integration. We want to do more LDAP and Radius, but Active Directory is what we've started with. And it's just as you say, I can go from user ID to IPs to MAC addresses to switch port, all automated. You just type in a user ID and we know where they are.
So you can say, where is Joe?
Yeah. No problem.
And the controller will say, well, Joe is on port X on switch Y, and his IP address is this, and his MAC address is that.
Exactly.
Can you also do, how can Joe get to Jane?
We could, but we don't really, there is path planning.
Yeah.
But we haven't, none of our applications have made use of it at this point. All of our applications are really edge focused, and so we try not to require OpenFlow at every, up
no,
through the core.
No, but you could combine the visibility of endpoints that you have with traditional troubleshooting process, like, okay, what's the next hop?
Yep.
What's the next hop? Mm-hmm. What's the next hop?
Yep.
Yep. Just the trace route.
Yeah. OpenFlow is very L2 centric. It's not, it doesn't have anything that's specifically L2. But the problem is L2 is all MAC learns. And so the information about the forwarding topology is just in the MAC learns. When you get to L3, you actively be running OSPF to take all those LSAs and understand it. So it's another layer of abstraction that we really haven't delved into
what
yet.
What happened to SNMP? You can use SNMP to figure out what the forwarding.
Well, I mean, you could pull the forwarding base instead of the route tables.
Yeah.
But that's
so. This is where management comes in.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to guess how we do that, we use SNMP,
right? Of course.
So we end up doing RESTful calls into the controller to grab all the topology and host information and state information and overlay that on a topology map with SNMP, start looking through bridge tables, QBridge tables, all the L3 tables to figure out what does that actually look like, and then meld the two together to say here to here. And Craig made a point that I think is really important for people who are not in deep into OpenFlow to understand is a lot of the stuff that we're looking at. You only have to enable the edge switches. You don't do this in your core, which, you know, when you're looking at implementing a new technology, it can be considered to be risky, right? This the classic Jeremy Shulman blast radius problem, right?
Yes.
So it's really nice to be able to enable OpenFlow on an edge switch, get value from there. And this is in a lot of senses, this is the stuff we learned 20 years ago, market the edge.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same concept. Leave the core alone, let it do what it does.
Yep. Yeah, well, some people don't get it, but
yeah.
We are all in agreement.
Yes.
We're in violent agreement.
Don't muck with the core.
Yeah. And because you're only using OpenFlow, well, so far you're using OpenFlow just to glean.
Right, so, yeah, so...
So you're not even modifying the forwarding behavior.
Not
so,
yet.
So far, modulo box, it's perfectly safe.
So we've got three applications. Let's dive into one or two so we can start to see how it works. So a protector is probably the easiest one to really grasp because it literally pushes down one rule, which is UDP 53 redirected to the controller.
I'm actually describing that application in my SDN workshop.
Excellent. And so basically we suck up all the DNS off of the entire edge network and we suck it up to the controller and we compare where you're trying to resolve against a list of reputation sites. So is it likely a malware site or a botnet or just malicious downloads? And we rank the reputation, how likely you are to get something nasty if you actually connect to that site. And then you can obviously set thresholds as the whole application. We're interested in how it works more than what it does.
We don't care about that. That's an application.
Yeah, it does stuff. But the thing that... So you could do this other ways. You could do it on a DNS server. You could have a clean DNS server where you just don't let the entries in. But what's different about this application is we know who asked for what. And we can keep a hit counter. And so if you've gone to a bad site once, twice, okay, you clicked a bad link, not a big deal. If you do it 10, 12 times, you likely have a virus that is trying to get back to command and control. And so now you don't have to, but you can consider them infected, and then we can quarantine them. And we quarantine them by throwing down just a few more OpenFlow rules, which is we should let the DNS still get sucked up, we let you go to remediation servers, and then everything else gets dropped.
Yeah, and you can do HTTP redirect if you wish to push them to remediation site.
Yeah, what we were doing now from the controller is because we're already sucking up their DNS, we're just replying with whatever they wanted to get to CNN, we just give them the remediation server's IP and call that CNN just to push them over.
So interestingly enough, what we've seen in the wild with this is that people are taking, like any good technology and any good engineers, they're looking at what it does.
And break it.
And
morph it.
Yes. But they're also using it for unintended things. So we've seen people putting in rules like, you don't get to go to Facebook between this and this time. Right?
Of course.
It's actually kind of interesting that they're using it more not from a QoS or not from a security application, but kind of shifted it into a quality of service application.
Blocking Facebook during prime time, isn't that security?
Yeah, it might be.
Well, if you're doing it in a high school, that could be your security.
So that just with those couple rules, with the intercepting UDP 53 and then pushing down some ACLs, it's nice, it's crisp. There's not a lot of rule space impact. There's not a lot of north-south traffic. The DNS can be a bit much, depending on how much you've got, but we have some other things in the application. I think in this latest release, we watch and see how many DNS requests are coming from each device, and if it gets too high, you can have options where you just say, okay, I'm not going to protect that switch, something's going on, or you can say, let's lock it down, something's not right.
So if something is really bad, you can lock down the switch at least you're not harming the rest of the network.
So we have quarantining based on the number of bad sites you go to or the number of DNS requests a second. Because in our beta testing, there was some malconfigured software on some laptops that was literally sending 3,000 DNS requests a second out of a single box.
That's nice.
Yeah, and so we were having scaling issues. We're like, how can we scale this up to thousands of users if each are going to send 3,000 a second? So we ended up figuring out that was an outlier. So now we can quarantine individuals who are doing that as well.
And maybe that's another, you hit it on an interesting point of one of the bottlenecks to criticisms is table sizes, right? Yeah. How many floats can push into a switch, right? Mm-hmm. And so what Craig talked about there, and this is kind of the way so far, if my math is right, we've got what? 2-3 rules for the initial topology and host detection.
Yes.
Yep.
We've got a rule for forward to normal pipeline. Mm-hmm. And now we've got a rule for DNS intercept.
Yep.
So it's like less than 10 rules to get things started, and then a few rules for block client.
Yep, exactly.
And I guess you're blocking clients or redirecting them based on MAC addresses, right?
Yeah, I think we do MAC. We've gone round and round on this because there's some reasons why you might want to do IP. So if you're trunking all your wireless back to a wireless controller and then it's hitting the network, you could still, if where the controller plugs into the switch, if you do it based on IP, you can still buy it.
Because the controller is a router.
Yeah,
so you lose the original Mac.
Exactly. And so there's different thoughts. It's been a year and a half since I dug in. I know we started with MAC address, and I'm not sure if we do MAC and IP. So, but yeah.
But
I mean, they're both
available.
Yeah,
this works over wireless and wireline.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you're plugged into the switch or if you're behind the switch, like on a wireless access point, you can also deploy this on
exactly.
a trunk port.
Exactly. Yeah.
So wherever the traffic first hits an OpenFlow enabled ProCurve switch,
yes,
that's like the edge of the secure part
exactly.
of the network.
Yep. Exactly.
And on the wireless side, there's a little bit of you need to be aware that you might need to do local hop off from the access point
mm-hmm.
to get that policy there. Because otherwise it's going to do what wireless does. It's going to tunnel back to a controller, and then that's the ingress point to the network from at least the customer, the host
yeah.
perspective.
And
you might have to have the rule set on where the controller is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you wouldn't want to do MAC address on the controller, on the wireless controller,
sure.
because if we quarantine the wireless controller, that's
that
not
might
what
be
you
a
want.
Bad idea.
So, yeah, so there's a little, I can't quite remember, but I think we switched to IP, or maybe we do a combination
mm-hmm.
of the two.
Yeah, or, well, doesn't actually matter.
Yeah.
That's the implementation.
Yeah, you can do
yeah.
either.
Yeah, the important part is that you only use a few rules to get started.
Yep.
You use a few rules per blocked client, and every decent switch has, 1,000 entries in TCAM, at least.
Yeah.
Which means, 200 clients that can be blocked simultaneously.
Yeah. Which is...
Well,
usually,
if you have more, you have
yeah,
a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's one. And the way we started out and we based things on VLANs.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have different threat policies based on VLANs. And that's nice, but as you mentioned, Active Directory, I want to pull that back in. I don't know if we have it in this version. We started the Active Directory integration into this. And what we really wanted to be able to do is have the Active Directory user groups define the policy that you receive. And so the use case there is really like a K-12. If the teacher's going to Facebook, fine, or YouTube, right?
They should teach.
it's test time. They
yeah.
can go. But the students know. And so based off Active Directory, I see your source IP, I see who you are, I look back, oh, you're a student, what DNS are you trying to go to, yes or no, and I can block or allow or whatever based on that policy. So that's... can't quite remember if it's in this release, but that's definitely, we've started the Active Directory integration, and we're going to transition from VLAN-based to user group-based
mm-hmm.
policy.
So in traditional networking, we could have done some of that stuff in
with
theory,
ACLs, yeah.
but that's a combination
by
of...
By catching DNS requests and having a smart DNS server.
Well,
yeah.
no,
yeah.
not with identity, right? Identity, now you're going to have to get down to maybe an 802.1x implementation and, radius.
Yeah, you have to scrape the identities from wherever.
Yeah, it got painful. So by doing this at the software, the controller level, this becomes a lot more
simpler.
Simple,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's kind of the point, is how do we get past 802.1x and certificates
mm-hmm.
and PKI? It's painful, but it's what
yes.
we had.
But I think it's also just having that SDN platform. Now you've got an Active Directory integration. Now you're starting to have a higher level language to talk about your network. Right? You talk about your network and your policies in terms of user groups, and not IP subnets. And so it starts to be a little bit different way of managing.
Yeah, and the beauty is once you integrate Active Directory into the controller code,
yeah.
it's available to every application.
Yes, exactly.
So you don't reinvent the wheel 20 times.
Yes.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
The wheel gets better every time, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's rounder.
And every iteration has different bugs. Isn't that great?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, I'm picturing a car with four different sized wheels trying to make a...
That would be great.
So this, we're launching a new app at InnoApps. Mm-hmm. I'd like to give a little description of that.
Sure.
It's called HP Network Visualizer.
Mm-hmm.
And the intent is to really allow... It's an SDN app for network admins.
Okay.
And it's to assist in troubleshooting and understanding where the traffic on your network is and where it's going. And it's basically, it's all the stuff we've just talked about, right? We set up that hybrid networking, everything's up and flowing, we haven't done anything. And then the network admin comes in and he can select specific traffic to make copies of and send somewhere, store in a repository.
So smart tapping.
Yeah, but I'd say all this, the tapping implementations that I've heard about and dug into missed the mark a little bit. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is we've integrated OpenFlow in with the hardware copy capabilities of the switch. Mm-hmm. So the remote tunneling, the remote IP and IP.
So it's either so you, EO span, you remote mirroring. Create the tunnel as a virtual OpenFlow interface?
Yes.
And then you send the packet to normal mode, and you send another copy of the packet into the virtual interface.
Exactly.
Which is just another OpenFlow port.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it automatically lands at the analysis tool.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big bang for the buck. So now your entire SDN-enabled infrastructure is, the traffic is viewable on any port, any switch.
Well, you can configure very smart DAP ports anywhere in your network and redirect only the traffic you're interested in,
exactly.
Not all traffic coming on the incoming port.
Exactly. That's exactly the key point, is you be selective at the source, not the destination, for what you want to see, or a combination.
One of the feedback that came back from one of the early beta testers that we were working with was, you know, Wireshark is awesome. Its packet analysis is the truth. You can't get around it. This is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
How many people go there first? You never go there first, because to get there, you have to go through all the port mirroring configurations and ER span, and do you have conflicted implementations and all this craziness? And it's his first step now. He just goes straight there.
Yeah, that's true. Whenever someone says, I have a problem, you say, well, anything to or from that IP address, and you know where the IP address is because you have visibility, Oh, just give me the traffic.
Yeah,
exactly. And so now we've...
I mean, that's awesome.
And so we've integrated that with Active Directory as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so now when your user calls up and he says, yeah, I've got a problem, you don't
Let
even have to...
Let me see your traffic, Joe.
Yeah. Well, it's...
Let
it's,
me take a look.
It is a, it is a loaded weapon. You need a responsibility to handle this tool. And ability to decode packets. But you don't even have to walk the user through telling you where what their IP is. Right, give me your username or your user ID, and I'm in, and it's true. It's literally under a minute, probably under 30 seconds, you can be seeing packets. Which
awesome.
Is just, it's just a level of visibility we just have not had.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so nice to see that someone is actually rolling out interesting SDN applications.
Thank you.
And things that actually make sense, as far as not reinventing PBR and
I don't want to
learning switches.
Yeah, networking works generally, and the last thing I want to do is reinvent stuff that works. I want to add value on top of what you have. And maybe when everything's mature and stable and we iron out some more of the bugs, maybe we'll go back and get rid of spanning tree. That's top on my list, but it's still a ways out.
Spanning tree's not bad.
Dude, it's a necessary evil.
Yes,
there's a difference.
I said it
out loud.
Come on.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that I've done things like grab the OSPF LSAs going into the switch and just seeing those. I mean, that's a level of detail you just didn't have in the past.
Oh, that's true, yeah. You could mirror all LSAs floating around and recreate the whole network topology without even interacting with SNMP.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all sorts of interesting things you can start to do with these building blocks.
You don't even need access to all the switches. You just need access to one of them because it's flooded anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
No, that's in the area.
Oh, yeah. You can just get it. Yep.
That's good. Okay, so you mentioned three applications. We've heard about two. What's the third one?
So the third one's a network optimizer.
Mm-hmm.
And this works, today it's specifically focused on Microsoft Link. And so voice, video, desktop sharing.
Skype for business.
Skype for business, excuse me. And in the past and even today, Microsoft uses a wide range of port numbers by default. And you can tame it a little bit. But I think even when you tame it, it's difficult to get the voice, video, and desktop sharing split out into different port ranges. And then you create your static ACLs to mark at the edge, and it's...
Why can't they mark on the client?
They can. Do you trust it? You can if you want.
And this is a common voice issue. Like, if you look at Cisco implementations, it's...
Yeah, well, every...
You've got RTP, a 16,000 port range, and...
Yeah.
That's your ACL. It's...
It's everything.
16,000 ports. Come on. That's granular.
Yeah.
Now, if you can't trust the client, you have an interesting problem recognizing the voice.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me guess what you're doing.
Okay.
when you get that UDP packet from Link saying, I have this new voice call, you are configuring QoS marking on the edge switch, which is one OpenFlow rule per voice call.
It's close. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So Microsoft Link or Skype for Business created a diagnostics API.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was called Diagnostics API, and then they changed it to the SDN API based on this application. I think this application had a huge influence on the name change, let's put it that way. So what we do is we get basically the Diagnostics API just sends out a bunch of information about the Diagnostic API sends out a bunch of information about the calls and the endpoints associated. So it'll say the username, the IPs, and the TCP port numbers that they're using for the calls on both sides. And by listening to those log messages, we parse them. We know the user endpoints, where they're located through SDN, and we go down and we reach into the ingress switch on each side, and we mark the DSCP and calls for those ingress flows.
Yeah, which was nice and simple. One rule per
call, right? Ends up being a few more, because I forget in the last release, they started doing the port right above or below, the real-time TCP, the control channel.
You have RTCP and RTP.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
But still, assuming it's five rules per client,
yeah,
it's 200 still, clients per switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is
All active calls.
Yeah. For me, what I loved about this application is, I'll credit him, John Hudson from Brocade. He was doing an interview, mm-hmm. and they asked him for a description. What's your definition of SDN? And what he came up with is, SDN should be when the application requests service from the network and the network can respond, right? If you really go back and look at what we were doing with ACLs and QoS, we're pretty much guessing.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to anticipate.
Yeah, we're looking, and it's a system of inference where we're looking at what am I seeing up to this L4 state, nothing about the application. And then we're pretty much guessing that with some degree of accuracy. And this isn't that anymore. This is the application actually notifying the network and the network responding. So it's
kind of... Let me ask you a question. Weren't we doing that with RSVP?
Yes.
And wasn't, no one was using that.
But that's different because I think RSVP was point to point. It's client to client, right?
Well, the original idea of RSVP was to emulate ATM circuits end to end across the network, so it totally didn't scale. Because you get soft state in the core switches, which is like totally no.
And there was also the anticipation that you had control over the entire path, right?
Yeah.
So I know in some of the early versions of the Link Optimizer app, we actually looked at doing the whole path and programming
the
whole
flow. And then you figured out that.
And we went, yeah.
Well, it was antithesis to our whole start at the edge and add value without requiring people to enable OpenFlow in their core. That just, and the rule scale at the core would, again,
yeah,
blow up.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
So, to be clear about it, it also, you know, there's the idea that you must have QoS, mm-hmm. all your queuing throughout your whole network configured properly. Right, so that's the other thing is you can mark at the edge, and that's great that you have, you know, your DSCP 46 configured, but if you've got FIFO queuing throughout the rest of your network, this isn't...
And this is what happens when you forget to check the batteries in your recorder. Luckily, Chris had an USB battery with him, and we were up and running in a few seconds.
So, to continue, before we got cut off, it happens. The idea here is that you still have to do what you need to do from an operation standpoint. You still have to configure QoS. If we're able to mark on, and what we're marking on is DSCP 46, right? So EF, all that very standard QoS. But if you've got FIFO queuing configured throughout the rest of your network, you have no priority. It is what it is. So we did look at originally trying to see if could we do the entire path, but it just kind of went against what we believed in, which is that we should, you know, start on the edge and leave the core alone to do what it's doing until we learn not to make all the mistakes that inevitably we're going to learn about.
Yeah.
I would rather blow up 24 users on the edge and kind of go, sorry, than take down the whole network. That's a career-limiting move.
Yeah,
yes.
We've talked to a lot of people about, and this is a new thing that we're kind of working around, is people have this interpretation that SDN means the Wild West, mm-hmm. right? That I enable SDN and now I have no idea what the state of my network is. And that's not what anybody wants. We're trying to add value on the edge. And really, to me, it becomes more, where do you allow the dynamic nature of SDN to give you value? If I'm willing to accept that you can do dynamic things at the edge of my network, and that's okay, in those edge devices, but I'm going to keep my core static, and I know what that is, and you can't touch it, you can still get a tremendous amount of value out of SDN, just tweaking the markings at the edge.
And you can do pilot deployments.
Yeah.
You deploy on one switch, let's see if it crashes.
Exactly.
Add another one. Oh, that one crashed, removed it.
Yeah. Oops. And back up a step.
And it's pretty amazing. Like, I actually ran this, ran my entire network in passive state for about 3 months. And because this is my home network, it's like, what, my kids' Facebook? I don't care. You know, it is what it is.
It was amazing what you discovered, right?
No, I didn't want to discover those things yet. But I've got voice, you know, I've got Cisco voice running across my entire house. And so I turned on OpenFlow well in production and just for giggles to say, you know, what's going to happen when I turn this on? OpenFlow enabled VLAN, bring it up, and I lost maybe a quarter second of audio in a live call. So it was something, don't ever do this in production from an operation standpoint. Get a change window, know what you're doing, test it out in a lab first. But I turned OpenFlow on, and now I have all these new capabilities open to me. You know, this new visibility happening, and it was one of those almost, it was so anticlimactic. It's like, ooh, I've got SDN, and
so
nothing changed.
So you have to turn it off and on five times, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, did it really happen? Like, nothing changed, right? That was the big part for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely learned some things you shouldn't do lessons. You know those lessons, early networking, where you log into a switch via telnet and you change the IP address of the interface that you're logged into.
Oh, yeah.
I had
reloading
some of those.
Reloading 5 helps.
Yeah, reloading 5. I had some of those where I OpenFlow enabled a VLAN that was the transit VLAN to get to the controller. And because I couldn't get to the controller, I couldn't get the rules to get to the controller.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a learning curve.
But again, those are things that we learned as, you know, very early on. And I still think that we as an industry operationally are learning some of those how not to do stupid things.
So, pull it back to the application just for a second. So Optimizer and the QoS, it's nice, but again, to me, the whole thing about SDN is I can bring information from outside the network into my network. And we did it with the application, but we're also pulling in Active Directory. And so the interesting thing we're doing now is we have what we call, I forget what we call, something like a preemptive QoS. So you don't have to do it, but if you want to, you can, based on user group, you can identify people, right? Mm-hmm. So two guys are chatting, they've sucked up all the SLA, right? And now you've got someone else coming in who's the VP. Guess what? You can remark them to best effort on the fly, and the VP can get the QoS you want them to. But these are the capabilities that are starting to come in and starting to get that extra information on. And the way we describe it, and I know it sounds marketing-ish, and I'm sorry, but it's really about business policy and how it gets translated into the network configuration. Right, today we have ACLs. Those are a terrible representation of your business policy, but it's the tool we've had.
Yeah.
But now when you start pulling in these outside sources of information, you can really have the network respond the way you want it to situations. Right? You can have it do the policy based on what your actual policy is. So that's
what's exciting. We know what that's going to result in is, you know, the Active Directory group with the CXOs in it is now going to give priority over network control traffic.
You guys get it totally wrong. You always give CXO the worst possible service.
Oh, I know that's the budget opening
budget,
event.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But that's not what's going to happen. We know there's, you know, CXO is going to say, "Hey, we're the most important thing over mission critical." Yeah, I know. I'm with you. I agree 100%.
Okay, so all this sounds great. Where can people find more about this?
hp.com/networking/SDN.
Yeah, so there's a /go/SDN, I think, is there's two different entry points in it. You know, the controller is downloadable for a trial, you know, so you can plug that into your network. It's actually really interesting to see how the price of 10-year-old switches has gone up on eBay in the last couple of years. Because
people are playing with this
1.3 capable gear in hardware, and again,
7 years old, 8 years old.
I think we'll talk about this later, but realize that OF 1.3 does not mean you suddenly get MPLS in a Switch that cost you, you know, $1,000.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Although.
Yeah, it's not magic.
Yeah. Okay, and if people want to find you online, how can they get in touch with you?
I finally got a Twitter account. Chris has been beating me up.
Good.
Neat Nets, NETS, mm-hmm. Twitter.
And I'm Netman Chris on Twitter.
And in case you stumbled on this podcast for the first time, I'm Ivan Pepelniak and at iOS Hints on Twitter. You can find me on ipspace.net. If you want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net where you'll find all sorts of training, webinars, blog posts, books, presentations, videos, and this podcast.